My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Paul Fioriga hosts a great podcast called Storylines Live. Paul, tell us what you talk about on the show.
The most important story any business owns, it's capital S story. The narrative that answers why someone would buy from, work for, invest in, or partner with that business. In each Storylines Live episode, we explore business storytelling and interview business leaders and marketing experts about their capital S stories.
Awesome. And where can people subscribe?
Go to wordwriteagency.com/storylines or find the show at marketingpodcast.net or search for Storylines Live wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
I'm Nick Westergaard, and this is On Brand, helping you tell your story.
My guest this week is Zachary Slingsby.
You know, it starts with what you would do as a consumer. I think we're very smart as consumers. I think we get really muddled. The waters get very muddled once we start thinking like brands and businesses, and when self-interest comes into play, and once we start making marketing choices instead of decisions that we would want other people to make if it was our time on the line and our interest on the line.
Zachary Slingsby is a writer, short film creator, and founder of Human Factor Media, an award-winning branded storytelling company that has worked with leading brands and publishers to create videos people actually want to watch. His company is based between Nashville, where he lives, and New York City, collaborating with brands to create stories and films instead of ads and interruptions. Zachary Slingsby, welcome to On Brand.
Hey, Nick, thanks for having me on.
It is a treat to talk with you, and especially with that last call to action of creating more ads than interruptions. But moreover, talking about videos people actually want to watch, because I feel like so many of us over the past, it seems like it's been the better part of the past decade, has been more video. And we sometimes answer that call with quantity as opposed to quality. And I feel like your bio teases a lot of that out, talking about what people actually want to watch. So what's the secret when there is so much video out there?
Yeah, there really is. And you're right. The proportion is growing every year. I don't remember the statistic, but something like more content is being uploaded to YouTube now every day than previously existed throughout all of history prior to like 2015 or something like that. So the decibel level is insane. What is the secret? I mean, I'm not going to pass myself off as the holder of the key, but I think that
tell us the one thing quick.
the one true moment. I think that, it starts with what you would do as a consumer. I think we're very smart as consumers. I think we get really muddled. The waters get very muddled once we start thinking like brands and businesses, and when self-interest comes into play, and once we start making marketing choices instead of decisions that we would want other people to make if it was our time on the line and our interest on the line and our own perception of what's worth our engagement. So I think it starts with that perspective shift. And then I think it's a question of the power of entertainment. You know, how much do you regard the power of entertainment? You know, to me, it's the end all be all thing. It's the thing that is coveted. Someone's attention is all that you can really play for. You know, we have all these amazing ways of getting in front of people now. But we have a huge challenge in getting them to care about what we're saying. Is we can micro-target anybody, we can get on anybody's newsfeed, we can get on anybody's radar. But then as soon as they see us, will they click away? Will they click the skip now? Will they shut us up? You know, probably, right? So how do we stop that? How do we have the pattern interruption that's going to say, you know, this is worth your time, this is interesting or narratively driven or entertaining? And I think that's where the magic comes in.
How do you find some of those inflection points to either interrupt that behavior or force the interruption? What signals should you be looking for in the content that you create?
Yeah. I mean, there's different schools of thought on this. You know, I mean, the first is that you have 3 seconds and you better do something high octane and strange and incredibly intriguing right up front, and kind of move your value proposition to these 3 seconds, and that's what you have to grab somebody. There's good data on that, and that's fair, but I think it is a bit of a hack, right? And I know we are fans of hacks now. We think hack is a good – that's not looked at as a pejorative anymore. It kind of used to be, but somehow now we think that that's like a really good way to go about, you know, our strategies. So I think one of the things that we lost there, though, is the idea that there's some shortchanging going on when you just use a hack. And so I think that when you're making branded content, when you're making branded videos, you want to be more holistic than that in your strategy, by which I mean, you want to think about, well, if someone did watch the first 3 seconds and then the 3 seconds after that, and then maybe the whole 5 minute video or the whole 20 minute video, would they come away with that kind of resonating feeling that would make them want to tell a friend to go and have this experience? Is it shareable content? Right. And that's the coveted kind of adjective, shareability. If something is shareable, it's probably because it has some factor in it that is akin to your favorite show, your favorite movie, your favorite book. It's got something in it that really is going to strike a chord with you where you say, I've experienced this. This is true to my life. So I want to tell my friend because I think they'll have the same experience. And that's that reverberating feeling of resonance. It's so hard to look away from that or to walk away from that without feeling affected. I think that should be the goal.
Well, it's interesting, your reference of hacks too, because I feel like as marketers, we often are, dozens, hundreds, thousands of article headlines came to mind of the top 6 hacks you need to do XYZ. And everybody's looking for hacks. Even my kids watch TikToks with life hacks that they then share with me. But I think it's an important note what you say about shortchanging. It's almost like in what you're saying too is less than a hack of here's the easy way to make the video. It's more like some of these foundational building blocks of engaging moments connecting to other engaging moments. So is the most hacky that you can get with it to kind of break it into smaller pieces?
Yeah, right. That's a good point. Probably. Right. I mean, can you elaborate on what you mean by smaller pieces?
Oh, I realized after I asked that it had kind of two meanings, because of course now we've got all of this micro content and micro video content. Not the specific deployment like that. I just meant the planning of it, like you were talking about. Yeah. We gotta hook them in these 3 seconds, and then so what's our It's almost in breaking it into smaller pieces. It's almost like you need to plan for that first 3 seconds, and then the next unit after that. Not that it goes 3 seconds at a time. That'd be exhaustive. But it almost seems like it makes me think of like writing a piece of music that there's different movements through here that one has to connect.
Yes. Yes, that's a good point. Are you musical? Do you have like a musical background at all?
I'm a fan, but that is really it was the third chair French horn, which doesn't sound real pretty.
It was a small school. I know in a big city, maybe third chair might be more reputable.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's it still counts. I live, as you said, now in Nashville. I moved here about a year and a half ago, and everyone is in the music business, and it's very it's a really musical place, and that energy is amazing. But you do learn about kind of what you're saying, which is stringing along, you know, that feeling of listener engagement throughout a song. And I think that's a really good analogy. I never thought of it, but that is true for online content. It's true for all storytelling. It's true for movies, true for books. It's true for figuring out, okay, well, what's the next propulsive turn that some piece of entertainment is going to take? But music is a really interesting analogy because honestly, with YouTube content, it's not quite there, but the level, the 3 second kind of, the 3 second fragment is a unit of measure now. It really is. And not just the first 3 seconds, right? Like we do a Snap Discover show. So Snapchat has a publishing platform where they publish original web series and short content. And we do one for the New York Post, a comedy show. And we do a YouTube, a couple of YouTube shows for other publishers. And when we started, even not that long ago, the unit of measure that we thought of was, okay, every 12 to 15 seconds, you know, what's the next thing, right? And now that's really shrunk down to like every 8 seconds. And so it's like you have to – you're always thinking about what is the user engagement. So on some level, you're right. You have to do that. And that's just the way that – to be competitive in a content landscape – you do have to break it down to those things. But to your point about hacks and to you know, there is a trade-off if you're only looking at it by those units and not in the macro picture. If you're not looking at what the overall story is, what's the overall theme, you know, what's the overall – is there an overall kind of purpose to this that's going to be either enriching or evocative or resonating?
We've talked about a lot of different pieces of the planning from kind of that you know, that we do well when we think like customers versus like brands. We've talked about the first 3 seconds, the propulsive turn. I feel like it's an analogy I make here on the show in planning workout a lot. I feel like it's sort of when you're like organizing a closet and that first step is taking everything out of the closet and you've got it all spread out all over the floor. Where do you start? Do you start with the first 3 seconds? Do you start with a bigger objective? I'm having trouble with my small and big lenses here.
Right. I love the closet analogy. It's so true. And it feels like any startup or anything, you just like, what do we looking around? Where do we go? I think that is true. And you're getting bombarded with suggestions if you're a brand at any level, right? Small, middle tier or household brand. We've worked with all kinds and you always have more options than you can possibly fund, right? Or devote resources to. So, in terms of content, where do you start? I mean, for us, when we come in and meet with a brand, we're usually brought in with our pitch deck. We show up with ideas and we have 3 to 5 ideas for campaigns or for short films or series that we think will have that kind of magical resonating impact on the kinds of people they're looking to find, right? It's not necessarily for everyone. It doesn't have to be for everyone. It has to be for who they've kind of established that their brand is there to be for, to engage with. And so where do we start with those ideas? It's definitely not at the level of the first 3 seconds. I mean, that comes last. It's probably – what's the human factor? You know, what's the thing, what's that moment that you think, where does your product or service touch the real lives of human beings? You know, where's that intersection? And where does the consumer become the person? You know, where does that transformation take place? And that's the intersection we try to start with when we think of storytelling.
On Brand, we'll be right back after this.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure. I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/MPN to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/MPN. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be. To be.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Paul Fieriga hosts a great podcast called Storylines Live. Paul, tell us what you talk about on the show.
The most important story any business owns, it's capital S story. The narrative that answers why someone would buy from, work for, invest in, or partner with that business. In each Storylines Live episode, we explore business storytelling and interview business leaders and marketing experts about their capital S stories.
Awesome. And where can people subscribe?
Go to wordwriteagency.com/storylines or find the show at marketingpodcast.net or search for Storylines Live wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
Now, back to the show. So speaking of intersections, and I love that as a function of planning, but with intersections, you work a lot at the intersection of artists and brands, and those are some big constituencies that don't always see eye to eye, but can find mutual benefit. How do you navigate that?
Oh, what a question. Yeah. Have you sounds like you've experienced that.
Well, I know, again, it's just what I said of there is mutual benefit, but there is, especially on the part of artists. Let's start with that one. There's kind of a mistrust of, I mean, again, pick a quote about art and commerce, and it doesn't end well for commerce, the quote.
Yeah. Where to start? I think there's always been a tension between art and commerce. I don't think that's going to go away. But I also think there's more parity than there's ever been, in a way, because you have – what social media did for brands was create a new sort of demand on their part. It said, you know, you have to be around all the time, and you have to be visible to everyone you want to sell to all the time. And your social media pages, you can use them as sales tools, but, you know, pretty quick you're going to get a referendum that that's not that effective to post all the time about what you're selling, what the discount is. Much better use of those channels might be to treat them as theater pages, which is what some amazing brands do, what Budweiser does and Yeti and the Huckberry and MeUndies and Samsung and Wells Fargo, all these, you know, MetLife, these guys are all used. They've turned their social channels into vessels for entertainment on different scales. And to do that and to do it well, you need artists. And so that marriage, that intersection, as you said, of brands and artists, they've got to find a way to put their weapons down, you know, on each side and work with each other in a way that's going to provide an economy for artists that never existed, you know, historically, or at least not at this scale. And the brands are going to, they're not getting shortchanged in that deal, because through being the purveyor of that artistic content, they're going to be, they have the advantage of attention, of getting into the hearts and minds of the people they want to eventually sell to. So I think it's a reasonable trade. I don't think it's a trick. You know, it's not any kind of a grift. I think it works out. And man, I'll tell you, I had a breakfast a couple hours ago with a friend of mine who's deep into Web3 and the NFT world. That has applications for storytellers and artists that we can't even conceive of right now. So anyway, that's a long answer probably, but that's my first thoughts.
No, I want to come back to storytelling, but first I want to back up because I always profess to being a word nerd here. I love the idea of social channels as, I believe you said, theater pages. That's not a term that I've heard before. Could you step us through an example of that a little more?
Sure. Here's MetLife. I'll give you two examples. MetLife does something kind of brilliant, right? They have little vignettes of small businesses, and they tell the story of, you know, let's say, you know, an immigrant founding a small business and making the American dream a reality. And that's the only thing they want to do when they have you on their LinkedIn is tell you that story, right? They're not trying to tell you their premiums and their discounts for you as a business owner. They're only trying to engage you and source you for 3 to 5 minutes, and then they're going to let you go. Below that, if you want to click through, you can see their insurance plans. They have the option there for you. You can shop. You know, there's a shop now option all the time. But the goal of the page is to be a theater page. Yeti is famous for this, right? North Face, famous for this. They're telling stories. They're creating award-winning films. Lexus has a comedy page. That's, you know, Colin Quinn was doing a show with Lexus. Everyone is a head scratcher, but it's like they figured out that the best way to capture audience share is to put on a show, is to create entertainment. What's the biggest scale option of this? Amazon. Amazon Prime creates shows and movies, and the trade-off there is once you're a Prime member, they know you're going to shop 3 times as much as non-Prime members. So you come for the entertainment, you stay for all the stuff in the store. Jeff Bezos famously quipped that winning Golden Globes helps us sell socks. And that's exactly the new relationship between entertainment and shopping that we're seeing emerge all over.
You know, that's such an interesting point, and it just feels like it reinforces the more things change, the more they stay the same. Because, you know, the prime example too is one of those that it's like, even though it was called a soap opera for so many years, a lot of people didn't connect the dots and realize, oh, that's why it's called that. It's because it was paid for by soap, so that you would hopefully buy soap.
Buy soap. So true. Good, great point. Yep.
And I love all of those examples too. So thanks for giving us a deeper dive with MetLife, Lexus, and especially Amazon. Talk a bit. I said I wanted to come back to this, and I want to make sure I don't lie because it's a big topic. You were talking about storytelling and the approach with artists and brands. Talk a bit about Human Factor Media, your unique approach to storytelling, which I think, just like we said with hacks, you know, there's some of these that kind of have buzzword syndrome, and it's easy to find articles about storytelling out there. But what is your approach to this very buzzy concept?
Yeah. We come at it from a pure creative perspective. Our background is not in marketing. It's in the creative arts. So my background personally is in writing, MFA and literary writing, and our team has a background in production and TV and film and in other forms of, you know, cinematography and the visual arts. And so we are bringing together, and our kind of collective of talent is all based in either film or comedy or writing or acting. So we're kind of trying to bring this new pool of talent into the mix of branded storytelling. And we think that, you know, it's not, we think it's a really well-suited match to the task of getting attention at this time, as you say, which is so noisy and so busy. So that's our, secret sauce, for lack of a better term. How do we, you know, kind of who are we and what are we about? I mean, we're a young company. We're 5 years about compared to some of the other players in this field. We're younger. You know, we're a little smaller. We have a production team in New York, production team in Nashville. Worked with, as I said, brands at every tier, you know, from the lesser known guys, some startups to some nonprofits to middle tier stuff, all the way up to New York Post and LG and Planet Fitness, Snap Discover, Sleep.com, doing a YouTube show now for Barron's. So we're in the third inning, I would say. We're getting going. But I think, you know, we've gotten to win some accolades and some short film festivals and stuff. And so We're excited about where we are, but I think we have a long way still to go as the market continues to evolve. I mean, to me, when we started this, I felt like we were inventing it. I felt like we were going to invent this idea of brand entertainment. But looking around, there are a lot of shops of creative folks just like ours who realize that this is a new market for their skill set. And I think it's very exciting. I mean, to me, there can't be enough of this going on, because the more of this there is, the less obnoxious, disruptive ads that we all have to sit through. So I think it's win-win.
Well, it's interesting, because I feel like it does connect back to that earlier conversation of artists and brands. And I think you said something really interesting about approaching this from the creative side versus the marketing side. And I know I'm a little fixated on where do you start, but I wonder if that's a challenge that stumps us of that. I want to say this the right way, but I'm just going to risk being clumsy here and say, do we start too often with our marketing hat on and not enough from the side of creative arts, of entertainment, of what do my people want to see? Like you said with Colin Quinn and Lexus. I mean, there may be some thinking that really supports that. You know, you kind of shrug at it, but maybe it's as simple as that's we know our people, and that may be what they want to see. And I wonder if sometimes if we come down too much on the marketing side of that and end up killing good ideas early.
Hmm. No, I don't think that's clumsy at all. I think that's very well said. I think that's what happens, and it's probably the result of fear-based decision making. You know, when you have very limited runway to make choices, and you get a very quick referendum on those choices. If you're, let's say, in the early phases of a company, or if you have quarterly earnings reports that you need to speak to, you know, I'm sympathetic. Those are not easy things to navigate. But I do agree with you that we can be very intolerant or impatient, or maybe too quick to be pragmatic about some of those content and marketing decisions that are reaching or trying to reach people. And we're trying to, you know, human beings on the other end of stuff. And so you're making a video that you know for sure nobody is going to be interested in watching. You have to kind of take a moment with your team and say, guys, I know we got all our points in, we listed all our adjectives. You know, we said, you know, who this is for, what it costs, why it's better than the other mousetrap, you know, but after all said and done, and we've put the final polish on this, we're ready to send it out. Is anybody going to watch this? Yeah. And why, you know, are they going to watch it begrudgingly? Are they going to watch it and say, I could need this. Maybe this is going to help us, you know, and I'll get back to it. You know, are you trying to offer surprise and delight to anyone? There was a tweet that went super viral not very long ago in the marketing world that said the era of product differentiation is over. And I thought that was a really great synthesis of where marketing is possibly coming up to, which is we just are kind of deaf and blind to these product distinctions, and branding has to be about something more now.
That is such a great quote. And I love the roots, like you were saying, in fear-based decision-making. And that's why I wanted to ask one more question before we got to the smile, because I couldn't resist, and maybe the fear-based plays a role in it, but why do so many branded videos fail?
Do you have an answer?
No. I feel like we were kind of circling around one there that I feel like, and maybe some of it gets back, kind of been circling around it with this conversation of arts and commerce, and do we ruin things a little too early? Are we not hooking them soon enough? I don't know. So what's your take?
I think that's all right. Why do they fail? The question is, right, okay, let's say you go into a CEO's office and this person is bombarded, or the founder, the entrepreneur behind a company, and they have to make a million decisions. Generally, they've already had their great moment of inspiration to start this company. You know, they have been creative in this one or two ways where they found a market insight, a market need, and they have started this thing, and it's really cool, and they took on a lot of personal risk to do it. And that's where they live. That's their creativity. You know, they've exercised it already. Outside of that, they're usually deadly pragmatists about everything else. You know, what's the most economical we can be over here? What's the best way to marshal these resources? Where's our end market? How are we going to reach them? How are we going to get them to understand our value proposition? Those are all the very pragmatic things they have to do after the big moment of inspiration. So to me, a kind of a psychological answer, I don't know if this is what you're going for, but a psychological answer is they've kind of spent their creative risk-taking already. That capital has kind of been shelled out. Now when it comes to the content side of it, the communication side of it, they are not as much thinking about being fanciful and creative. Now some are. There's wonderful exceptions to that rule. But, you know, it's not the norm. And so I think, you know, you have to say you're in a boardroom and someone suggests, look, let's make a barbecue sauce. Let's make a 4-part comedy series about, you know, shenanigans at a barbecue instead of talking about the flavor profile. You can have a lot of people in the room who raise their hand and say, well, what does that have to do with our sauce? Uh-huh. And fair enough. Fair enough question. What does it have to do with your sauce? You know, it not much. You know, it has to do with the human moments that could take place around this experience of where your sauce fits into a person's life. Anybody could make that. But any paper company could make The Office. You know, any wine brand could make Sideways with Paul Giamatti. You know, any auto engineering school could make Fast and the Furious. And all of these are real life examples of where the product around it skyrocketed to popularity after the entertainment came out. So it's like you could own a category and nothing special about your product is embedded in that. But what's the difference between that and traditional advertising? When High Noon puts their brand all over Barstool, there's nothing specific about High Noon in what Barstool's talking about. They just are getting the value of that attention. Right. So you know, when you're with the Kodak Theater in Hollywood, there's nothing specific to Kodak, you know, MetLife Stadium, nothing specific to MetLife about, you know, where these people are playing a sport. They know they have eyeballs. They know there's attention. So I think if we could spend a little more time as brand managers cultivating attention, even if it feels disconnected from the specifics of our company, I think that is a much better starting place.
That tied everything together nicely, almost like the last question in a podcast interview. Now, we've talked about a lot of brands. We've smiled a bit, but one more time, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
We mentioned quite a few of them here. I'm always looking at what Yeti's doing. I mean, they're the kingpin as far as I'm concerned. We haven't gotten them yet, but we'll get them. North Face, I think, is doing really interesting things. Here's a funny example, though. We watched, my wife and I, Top Gun this week in the movie theater. Great experience. Couldn't recommend it more that everyone sees it in theaters. We had a blast. Now, coming out of it, my wife said that she had talked to a friend whose brother was in the Naval Academy, the equivalent of Top Gun. I mean, Top Gun's a real place now.
Yeah.
And he was the top 1% of Air Force pilots, Navy pilots. And he said that his whole experience of Top Gun was exactly what the movie was. It was just identical to the movie. And the Top Gun flight school is super famous now. And all of that, he said, came after the 1980 whatever movie, the 1986 or 87 movie. So the movie was so powerful that it actually changed the way that Top Gun was conducted. I mean, it made the whole experience more cinematic. People held their heads a little higher and conducted the whole thing as though they were part of a grand story, which they now were. Everybody, who doesn't know about Top Gun? And, you know, like there was an anecdote that when 24 was out, the cast of 24 was invited to a real CIA kind of underground headquarters, and they're walking around and all of the design format looks exactly like CTU in the show 24. And they say, you know, this looks awfully like our set. And the people said, yeah, we had the CIA guys had it changed after they watched 24. They had the whole office done in this kind of airbrushed stainless steel open concept, because it looks so cool when you guys were fighting terrorists doing it on TV. So it used to be that movies copied the people, and now people copy the movies. And it's so it says so much about the power of entertainment and trying to harness it.
That is a great answer. And if I could be a little punny for a moment, an on-brand answer as well.
Good.
Zach, where can folks go to learn more about who you are and what you do?
Humanfactormedia.co, our profile and our clients and our accolades on there. And then you can reach me directly, Zick at humanfactormedia.co, Zach at humanfactormedia.co. We're also on Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, et cetera.
Awesome. Well, we will link up to all of that in our show notes at onbrandpodcast.com. Zach, thanks for being on brand with us.
So fun. It's a great show, by the way. I love it. Thanks for having me.
On Brand is part of the Marketing Podcast Network. If you like what you're hearing, if we've made you smile, you can always listen free on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever your favorite platform may be. And please take a moment and rate and review the podcast to help others find the show. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Paul Fieriga hosts a great podcast called Storylines Live. Paul, tell us what you talk about on the show.
The most important story any business owns, it's capital S story. The narrative that answers why someone would buy from, work for, invest in, or partner with that business. In each Storylines Live episode, we explore business storytelling and interview business leaders and marketing experts about their capital S stories.
Awesome. And where can people subscribe?
Go to wordwriteagency.com/storylines or find the show at marketingpodcast.net or search for Storylines Live wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard him. Go subscribe.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.